This is Calliope Writing Coach, the podcast about writing and publishing success from every angle. I'm Angie Fenimore, international best-selling author and writing coach.
And I'm Michael Sheen, author, platform designer, and marketing master. Episode 13, It's Not About the Tights. Welcome, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Calliope Writing Coach podcast. Michael and Angie in the house, as always. And today, our special guest is Mr. Chris Brogan. Chris, welcome.
Hey, so glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Chris Brogan is CEO of Owner Media Group, providing skills for the modern entrepreneur. He is also a highly sought-after professional speaker and the New York Times best-selling author of 9 books and counting. His latest is called Find Your Writing Voice. Chris, it is such an honor to have you on the podcast today.
I hope I can be helpful. That's my biggest goal.
Absolutely.
Well, we're just thrilled.
So, Chris, you've had a long and storied career in the internet world and writing world. We are absolutely just excited to talk to you about your career. Tell us a little bit about what you've been up to lately.
Oh, lately, I guess as it would apply to your writing friends, I've been slogging through ideas for my 10th book. And what happened was, you know, people think that after you get a certain level of success, you don't have to really work with your proposal and work mm-hmm. with your publishers and all that. But Stephen King still sends in a proposal. So I sent in a proposal a couple of years ago. They agreed. Well, we fought about a while, then they agreed. And then I decided I didn't want to write that book about a year later. I said, oh, this is a horrible idea. Yeah. And so I said, I'll write this book. And they said, okay. And then I got about 2/3 of the way through that book. And I said, oh, I just read this thing that said that the market I really mostly wanted to have read this book, only 1% of those people think that what I'm writing about is kind of my big analogy was what they're into. And I was like, oh, so 99% of them will have to be convinced. Probably a bad book. So now I'm on a new iteration of what I really wanted to tell people anyway, with a whole different set of analogies. So I'm struggling with a 10th book, but in the best kind of way.
You write like I do. I have 5 in the queue. Yeah.
Awesome. All kinds of all over the place. Well, your 9th book is quite exciting. Tell us a little bit about that one.
Well, so I wrote that book for my fiance Jacqueline because she was getting ready to start doing some blogging and things like that and some just more writing than she normally does. And she had asked the question very straightforward, how do you find and cultivate a writing voice that you can translate how you normally speak and act and whatever to writing? I said, oh, that's kind of fun. So I banged out a not very big book, 70-ish pages, 77, I think it is, on how to do that. And in the premise, I guess what I wanted to do is just help more than just Jacqueline figure out how do you get your ideas into something usable, be that for publishing on the web or publishing in a newsletter or writing your own book. So that's what I did.
So the book is called Find Your Writing Voice, How to Write More Like Your Amazing Self for books, blog posts, and email. So I found the book very interesting. I thought that it was quite unique. You know, a lot of times we think of writing and we think of, you know, having to be literary and having to be eloquent. And what you're saying is develop your own voice and really kind of try to find that and just write like you speak.
So I think we're in the midst of a schism. I mean that term in its historical weight, like when churches come apart and all that sort of a thing. Mm-hmm. And I think language, especially the English language, is at a kind of breaking point and a schism. In the land of emoji and in the land where video mm-hmm. is consumed 1 billion hours a day compared to 19 minutes of Americans read 19 minutes a day, we have no time for a lot of the literary formality in which we've all been brought up. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, as literary books sell fewer and fewer, and as at the same time as, you know, mass market books continue to sell, you know, in their levels to the people that want that sort of a thing, those kinds of things as a backdrop, I was saying, how do we break past our formerly smart selves and how do we get to information transfer? Because, I mean, ultimately, there are some of us who want to write for the craft, I say, with mm-hmm. like, you know, squiggly quotes and a papyrus font. And then there's some of us who actually just want to reach people and smack them in the face with our business ideas or our literary ideas for that matter. And that's the book I wanted. I wanted to write a weapon book, not a Isn't This a Lovely Place book.
And that being your 9th book, you've had quite a career in publishing some amazing books. I first became familiar with you through your book, It's Not About the Tights. and Owner's Manual on Bravery, and thought that was just such an easy, great read. It really, has taken me to another level in taking action and making things happen.
You should know, Michael is such a fanboy. He's totally geeking out right now.
And so...
And really speaks to what we train people in, what we train writers in.
It really is just about putting yourself out there, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, a lot of what is, and by the way, you can see some echo in what It's Not About the Tights is about and what I wrote about in Find Your Writing Voice. One of the things I talked about in Find Your Writing Voice is you've got to stop writing as if you're trying to impress a professor or something. Mm-hmm. You have to stop writing as if you're worried that people are going to think you're stupid. A lot of people's writing style is built around what will people think of me and not how can I best get this idea pushed across.
Right.
And, you know, being a bibliophile myself, engaged to an even worse bibliophile, I think that there's just so many books, so little time, like the t-shirts and the tote bags say. And ultimately, I really just want us to reach the people that we're trying to serve. And so with bravery comes the ability to write something that will actually resonate with someone. And I think when we write from fear, we water everything down and we polish off all the edges until what's left is this terrible lozenge of a book that no one's going to want.
You know, I have the opposite problem. I don't blog, and I'm a fabulous writer, and I'm terrified of blogging because I can't, you know, I can't go back and fix those mistakes. Like, I'm all hung up on a misplaced comma, right? Later. So,
but that's why I like a blog, because you can click edit whenever you want. I mean, people will say to me, you know, 7 years ago you wrote this and you put T-O instead of T-W-O, and I know you're smarter than that. I go, okay.
Oh, how fun.
And I just fix it and whatever. So, I mean, that's what I like about a blog is they're so ephemeral. Our weird egos think that the world watched it. You know,
Exactly where I am. Like, somebody saw that. Yeah.
Right. No one saw it. That's why I tell people, I just sent an email right before our interview to my friend Tim, who wants to really rebrand himself from, he's very prominent in one industry. He's going to go to this whole other industry. And he goes, what do I do? And I said, just launch the new thing. No one knows who you are. It's all good.
That's great.
Isn't that interesting? So you really developed your career through social media, through marketing, through blogging, even before it was blogging. You know, when I reached out to you to be on the podcast today, Angie was kind of like, well, who's that? And
that was a long time ago. I know who you are now. And I'm completely without, like, I couldn't sleep last night.
But, you know, you've really built up a following within the world of social media marketing and online marketing. How has that bled over now into this career of writing?
Well, I was a writer first and foremost. I mean, I was telling people I was an author when I was 5. And I used to buy all the Writer's Digest. You know, I loved, you know, on the Calliope site, there's all this stuff talking about, did you ever spend a lot of money on a writing conference and all that? I've been to all of them, you know, and I've bought every single Writer's Digest publishing guide and all those sorts of things. And, you know, the only thing I wasn't doing a lot was writing, as it turned out. And so my way into all this, I was writing tons of fiction. And when I started blogging in 1998, a lot of what I did was put my really crappy, depressing literary fiction online, because no one was buying it. And I wasn't getting it sold into books or magazines or anything because I was horrible. And what I liked about blogging was I was a self-publisher instantly. Boop, there's my writing. Do you like it? And I had fans. I had, like, you know, 5 fans, and they were all nice. One of them was my mom. Maybe 2 of them were my mom. She could have had an alias. But along the way, I started writing nonfiction right at 9/11 because my focus changed a lot on that day because I thought, oh, I need to know a lot of things I didn't know that I needed to know. And in that process, I just took a lot of what I like about storytelling and what I like about fiction and started writing nonfiction. I didn't, not unlike everything I've done in my life, I didn't have any good reason or qualifications to do what I did. I just started doing it. And my blog started getting more popular just because I wrote in a very atypical way than people. And I used words that people didn't expect. And I wrote in what turned out to be useful material, which was kind of at a premium, it turned out. Because everyone was so worried that, like, what if I give away my best ideas here?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Then what? Mm-hmm. And I tell people every day, give all your ideas away. Doesn't matter. You can still make money. My first ever book, Trust Agents, I mean, Julian Smith and I made, it was a New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Inc., and I forget what else, bestseller. We made, in cash on the book specifically, about $30,000 each. total over time. And but I made a couple million giving speeches about some small aspect of that book to lots of different companies over the years. So you could buy the book for $20 or you could buy me for $20,000. And I still made money. So my point is, give all your ideas away. Right, there's nothing you have to hide. You're all going to live.
Yeah. Yeah. There's something about being in person that, that does, you know, create that value.
Well, most, you know, most authors, it's like, that is where we make our money, not on book sales. It's, you know, on what you can do with that book, you know, that gave you cred. Right.
Yeah. There's very few of us who are wealthy because we write books. We're wealthy because the books give us a new key to a new door.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Right. That's what I was going to say was, you know, how has publishing that book, you know, you started out blogging, you kind of became well known because of your blogging, but then you wrote Trust Agents. And then, I mean, did that turn a corner for you as far as your fame?
Well, so it's weird because I was doing pretty well without it. And by the time I got that book deal, which was 2008, I was sitting at an event and I was kind of feeling full of myself. I was like, well, I'm pretty popular. And the person who ran marketing over at Wiley turned to me and said, hey, how come you don't have a book? There's a few more sentences, but for the sake of time. And I said, oh, I don't know, because it seems like a lot of work. Now, my whole life, I'd wanted a book deal. By the time I finally showed up, I was like, eh, I don't know. And so she says, no, you should totally do it. I'm like, okay. And I immediately called my friend Julian Smith. I said, hey, you feel like writing a book with me? He's like, I don't know. Okay. And so it literally went like that. Like, Julian wasn't any particular better or worse writer than me. Probably worse, if I were being true. But I said, you want to write a book? And he's like, okay. And that way I had a writing buddy. And so we did it. I was getting really good speeches before that point. I was getting lots of great attention before that point. But I blew up right about the same time. And so the momentum of having that book really took me up and over the wall. But I always tell people, the book didn't make me more successful. The book sort of prolonged my success. Okay. And it's useful to have that kind of a tool around. Mm-hmm. But I didn't need it to get where I got. I just needed it to stay where I was a lot longer.
Mm. Okay.
So, you know, you write about, and you know, and you've written your books around social media and marketing. And, you know, I mean, that world is changing so fast. There are a lot out there who now say blogging is dead. What's your take on that?
Everything's dead. You know, I'm always amazed at all the things that are dead. I make all my money on all those dead things. So email marketing is dead. I make money email marketing. I think that everything's dead if we think we're not paying attention to it or if we haven't heard somebody else talk about it. But it's kind of alive and well. I mean, I still get a lot of interesting business opportunities from things like blogging. So I can't say it's dead to me. Yeah. The other thing is that it's dead when people, you know, really try to water it down and do dumb formulaic stuff with it. And I just find that if you're phoning it in, of course it's dead. It's like going to a bar and trying to pick up a girl by, you know, repeating the same line to every single girl in the bar. If it works, you're probably not getting the one you wanted anyway.
Yeah. You know, one of the big challenges that our authors face before they're published is that the publishing world wants them to have a platform. You know, how big is your platform? That's the second question they ask after they find out what your book is about. What advice would you have to a new, upcoming, not yet published author and building a platform?
You know, that's a really good point, and it's a really important point. And I sound like old man Brogan a lot of the time when I talk to aspiring authors, because, you know, it's like Groucho Marx. I would never want to belong to a club that would have me. the things that I learned after becoming a New York Times bestselling author and blah, 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 and all the other books I've written, so it has nothing to do with the ideas. Book publishing companies don't sell book ideas. They sell units of book, right? Mm-hmm. Like they don't care. Like, am I going to sell 20,000 copies? Then you are a good man. 10,000 maybe. Okay. Right. So that's what they want is, do you have a platform? Because your good idea, the good idea fairy is an evil beast, and nothing good ever comes of it. So it's more like, do you have a decent platform? So I tell them all the same things: grow a newsletter list, start a blog, you know, communicate in whatever way you can, do video if you want, do podcasting, make some kind of communications platform that makes people want to connect with you and learn your ideas inside and around the book. And by the time the book comes out, I think it was Godin that called a book like a really good souvenir for the rest of the experience. And I think that that's important.
That's great.
Again, as a bibliophile, I love books. My fiance loves books. We buy way more books than humans should.
We decorate with books.
Well, if I were to turn on the video camera, I'm surrounded on all sides by bookshelves that are not mine. So I'm with you there. So But I think that the whole develop platform thing, a lot of people see that as the after effect. A lot of people also think as an author that they're not the chief marketing officer of their project. But that's the only thing you get for marketing from any publisher in the whole wide world is like a court-appointed marketer. They're poopy. They don't have any good ideas. And they're just doing it because someone made them do it. They're not super passionate about pushing your book. So,
and they're not you.
You have to be the best.
You know, they're imposters if they're acting as you. You know, you really have to be the face. You really have to be involved.
100%.
So our advice for even writers who are writing fiction is to come up with a one-liner for your life and come up with a cause and get involved. And then once you have that one-liner for your life or a cause, then you can promote your message rather than just promoting yourself, buy my book. You're actually promoting a message.
Yeah. And that one-liner is what you're committed to. You know, what's the bottom line? What do you want to see happen in the world? What do you want to forward, you know?
And it may or may not relate to what you're writing, but if you've got a message out there that people start following you and then they learn that you've got a book, they'll buy your book, whether it's fiction, whether it's nonfiction. I think that is something that is really important that I think a lot of new authors struggle with.
A lot of what's common in the majority of all my books is one really simple underlying theme, which is how to use technology to drive better human interaction. What I'm looking at in all of the different things I've written isn't, gee whiz, this tech is neat, but it's always about, hey, I can do this really cool thing and make customers feel seen and heard and loved and whatever, which will then in turn make it better for my business. And so if you're writing fiction, maybe my big push is that the world is a tough place and I'm going to have to make my own way in it, you know, whatever. But to your point, that one line, that one driving flag, people don't consume books for pleasure or business if they don't understand where you're going to take them on the journey.
Chris, you've written several books. If one of our listeners is just now finding out about you through this, in addition to Find Your Writing Voice, what books could you recommend that you've written to get them started in this world of brand building?
You know, the one right before it might be the best one for that, which is called The Freaks Shall Inherit the Earth. I can tell you it's sold so poorly to business people because it's about entrepreneurship and business people think that's a terrible thing inside of big companies. Sold huge in China, by the way.
Interesting.
But China's kind of on this new revolution and there's a lot of people going from pluralism to trying to figure out individuality. And I think that's why. And so I get an email or two a week from people from China who read the book, which always makes me thrilled. I get to use Google Translate and it's awesome.
Oh, isn't that fun?
Yeah. And so the ideas inside of The Freak Shall Inherit the Earth, I think are really good for artists. I wrote it for my children. My children are both weirdos and I doubt they'll ever have a normal cubicle job. And so I wanted to give them some tools to help them figure out how you harness your weirdness because it's not okay just to be weird. You have to be weird in a somewhat applicable way that you can use for use your powers for good. And so that's what I built.
Okay. One of your most read blog posts, I was reading from your blog, is 100 blog post ideas. And as I read through that, it's very specific towards businesses and how to connect with their consumers, essentially. Do you have a similar post or similar ideas for authors and blog posts that they could write?
So interesting that you say that, because what I would say back is that, by the way, that post is still one of my top five posts every single week, even though it was written in 2007. It is the number one thing that people search on for Google for me, besides my own name, which is weird, but bless their hearts. So some of the posts, I mean, how I find blogging ideas, right? So turn the word blogging to writing. How I find writing ideas. My children will do it differently. You can look at a lot of these posts and see them as a writer making a mini series, right? So there's all kinds of things hidden in this language that you can use. You know, books I want to write. Any author could write that post. You know, if I were a television producer. So I'm just rolling through these and I'm just sniffing out when I feel frustrated, friends I can't wait to meet. You know what I mean? So there's all kinds of posts in there that authors could take to their interests that have nothing to do with business. And I think that if we're going to be good authors, we have to look around for food everywhere. And there's manna falling from the sky all the time for inspiration. And any of your Calliope people know that. The best way to keep getting fed is to keep looking for the food.
Well, we tell them you carry a capture tool everywhere you go. You just never know.
Those ideas drop in from the ether all the time.
That's right.
Well, excellent. So you still maintain a written blog, but yes, you've recently delved into video blogging.
Which I thought was really fun. By the way, yes, I like that. Keep doing it.
I have. I blame my fiance for that because she started getting involved in video blogging for her project Veggie Mighty, and she just looked like she was having so much fun, and I thought, well, okay, I'll try this. And I had used video before in the past, but I always thought it was a bit cumbersome and crazy and all that. But in the process of showing her how to edit, you know, using the tools that I used, I got excited about it again. I said, this is a lot easier than I remember it to be. And so I'm really kind of trying to get my storytelling on in there. And that's the fun part for me. Like I do an audio podcast, I write blog posts, I create media in lots of forms, but then I thought, okay, well, there's a lot more to this visual storytelling. I've got to do transitions. I've got to think about B-roll. I've got to do all the stuff that producers do and tell my story. Mm-hmm. And so some of the episodes are a lot more production heavy. Some of the episodes are a lot more story heavy. I've got to find that marriage or it won't work. And that's been really fun.
It was interesting because as I was introducing you to Angie and the concept of having you on our podcast, we read through a couple of your blog posts and then stumbled onto your video blog. And what Angie said was, oh, wow, he's really cool. And, you know, the blog posts that you write are great and they, you know, convey lots of great information. But with that video blogging, we got to know you. I mean, you're taking us inside your house. You're, you know, we're driving around with you throughout the day. You're like, this
seeing
is what
the action
I do
figures.
On a daily basis. And, you know, you put your pants on one leg at a time, just like everybody else.
And, you know, something else I noticed too is, you know, and you've hit on it, but I think this is part of what has you be so successful is you're telling story. You're doing it inside of story, you know.
Right. And so I have one, two, or three things that I want all those videos to do. One, I obviously want there to be a point that comes across and people go, oh, yeah, I totally get that point. The other thing I want is I want people to see that I'm such a normal, regular guy because for I don't know how many years people have thought of me as the Chris Brogan and this guy, and I see him at conferences and he must be very fancy and whatever. And I like to show myself taking out the trash. Mm-hmm. And as my fiance points out to me all the time, I have this sort of chip on my shoulder about saying, no, 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 I'm a regular guy. I'm just like you. And that's not how a lot of fame is built. Fame is built on that sense that there's a distance of pedestal between me and the audience. And I don't have an audience. I have a community that I serve. And my belief is that if I can be down amongst them and show these examples, that's a better way to deliver that experience. And so I guess I do have that chip. I do like to show that I'm a regular guy and I take out the trash, I shower, I drive places, I go to the gym, and I run a business.
Mm-hmm. It's great.
Excellent.
I want to talk more about it, unless you have more questions.
Go.
Okay, great. I want to talk more about blogging. I know that there are other people out there that have the same questions I have. This is like for me personally.
Okay.
You know, so I have a marketing coach, Josh Rossi, who did those photo shoots with his three-year-old daughter, went really viral, like over 100 million views, dressed as Wonder Woman and Beauty and the Beast, reenacting Beauty and the Beast. And I'm his writing coach also. And but he is always saying, okay, Angie, blog, blog, blog. And I am so like hung up and I'm a prolific writer. And as soon as I sit down to blog, I've got nothing to say. I'd love to know like what you do. Is there any tricks that you can tell me like how to get around this so that I can just write?
So blog? The easiest way to do that is to stop looking at your belly button and start thinking, how can I help? How can I help? How can I help? So you help writers. That's your gig. Mm. So what you start looking to do in that premise is you start thinking, well, what's a writer going to get hung up on? You know, what? How to read a book like a writer. There you go. That's a post.
Okay, good. Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, I never get writer's block. Here's why. That's a post. You know, that time I got in an argument with Pressfield. That kind of a thing. You can start to see, which I did. I got in an argument because I didn't quite understand his concept of his view on the muse, which I know is really important to you. I said, I think the muse is bullshit. I think you have to sit down and work really hard. And Pressfield said, no, I think that too. I think the muse only visits the desks of those who sit and write at them every day. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, we could agree. We could be friends again.
Well, you know, to be clear about the muse, like that's a branding tool. And I believe it as long as it serves me. I don't actually subscribe to any belief that I don't know is a belief. Like, I create that as, okay, I'll believe that, and as long as it serves me.
That's a blog post,
yeah.
Angie.
Yeah.
That's a blog post right there.
Okay, so, good. There we go.
I mean, all you're looking for is that way. So, I mean, I have a blogging framework that I've taught people forever, which is basically come up with a title that matches your idea, come up with a picture that captures attention, doesn't matter if it relates to anything, and should not be stock photography. Write a first paragraph that's very personal, that gets people into the storyline, and then your very first subheading has to be the real big idea that you're trying to give people. A lot of times when people try to blog, they try to write these weird Butler did it kind of posts where you have to get all the way to the bottom to find the meat. But humans scan for 3 seconds tops, and if they don't feel like you're serving them, they run away. And so you have to lead with the lead, which is how newspaper people write.
I was going to say, this sounds like a journalist. Yeah.
100%. And that's the thing. Blogging is a journalism tool. It is not literature. You're not trying to build on a story. You're not trying to do any of that. But you are trying to give some sort of discrete transfer of information with a little emotional capsule around it. You know, Advil is my favorite aspirin because it has that nice candy coating. So I just hope for headaches all day going, duh, can't wait to eat some Advil. Your good information is the aspirin part, and the candy coating is the emotional connection. And so when you write a blog post, what you're trying to do is convey data with a nice emotional wrapper around it.
Right.
And but as far as like making that a day-to-day thing, my big advice on blogging is just always look for really distinct, discrete, teachable moments, and then always just pass those on as fast as you can think of them.
Okay, great. And what do you, what would you say is an ideal link for a blog? Like how many words?
So I've been trained out of this. So my what I used to tell people was 300 to 500 words, but now I'm being told it's 1,000 to 2,000.
Okay.
Or no one will even look at it.
So right. Well, 300 words, that's a picture book, you know.
Right. And what the thing is to me, though, is I was saying, well, people are not reading anyway. Why give them a lot more words? But it turns out that it's the word count makes us pay attention and think it's worth our time, because so many junk bloggers have come up in marketing and content fools that we look at 300 words as probably something silly and not serving.
Mm, great. That was so useful. I'm passing that on. Shout out to Jorgen, by the way, who blogs the Bipolar Buddhist.
Bipolar Buddhist.
Yeah, awesome. He's great. Yeah, this is what he needs.
That's great.
Mm-hmm. Well, Chris, what are the best ways that we can connect with you? You've got so many outlets out there. Your podcast. Tell us all the ways that you are out there on the web.
Well, that's two different things. The best way to connect to me is if you go to chrisbrogan.com and sign up to my newsletter. It'll be unique to any other newsletter that you've ever signed up for. The whole process will make you go, oh, I think I might like this guy. But yeah, I've got a podcast called The Owner's Mind. I've got a YouTube channel, just /Chris Brogan. And I have a blog at chrisbrogan.com. So if you're a reader, go read. If you're a listener, feel free to listen. And if you want to watch the videos move in front of your face, I can help you there too.
And a total shout out to your newsletter. It was that newsletter that had me reach out to you. You sent out a post that, or a newsletter, an email that just said, what are you up to? And so I told you we just started a podcast and asked if we could interview you. And I could have fallen off my chair when you responded back to that. I was very, very impressed.
Yeah, it turns out that one of the most interesting magic tricks in the world is what if you hit reply, and then what if the person actually replies back to you? I am a superior marketer in the fact that I do this weird thing called replying to people who ask me questions. And so I love it. You know, I love the fact that there's so many people out there wondering how to get more customers. And I'm like, oh, well, you know, one thing you can do is talk to the people that already you've given some attention back and forth.
Yeah.
And it turns out that's pretty useful.
That's great. Absolutely. You know, like we always say, the answer is no if you don't ask, you know?
Yeah. That's right.
Well, Chris, thank you so much. Thank you for being on our podcast today.
Yeah, what a treat.
Thank you. It was a real pleasure spending some time with you both.
And we look forward to meeting you in person. Where can we find you next?
Lord only knows. usually I'm traveling the universe at weird events that no one ever goes to, like, you know, glass blowers and stuff like that.
Excellent. So just keep our eyes open when we're traveling around the universe as well.
Yes.
Well, thanks again, Chris, and you have a great day.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks so much, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks,
it was real
Chris.
Fun. good luck with the rest of your podcast.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
Oh, it's so great. Much fun. Yeah. You have to listen to a couple. We add in sound effects and keep some outtakes sometimes. And it really, that's like great. Our goal is to educate, entertain, and empower. You know, that's what
those
we're
are
up
three
to.
Really good ease. Well, cool, guys. Thank you. And I'll let you be, but have a really good rest of your day.
Yeah,
hey,
you
thanks,
too.
You too. Thank you so much. Great interview.
My pleasure. Bye for now.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
If you like the show, shoot us some stars. It's all about the stars, baby. And be sure to share the Calliope Writing Coach podcast with your writer friends. You can find more episodes at calliopepodcast.com. Thanks for listening.